With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 146 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we are going to preview the 2018 NBA Finals. Going to sound familiar because once again it is the Golden State Warriors meeting the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we will break down how much is going to be different from the last three times, and we're going to give our predictions who we think is going to win. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, so check them out on Twitter, at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going, Brian, because, I mean, I don't know, should we just not do this one and just, like, use last year's preview instead, or the year before? Or the year before, even though we didn't have a podcast that year? Like, I don't know, I'm not sure how to feel about this, Brian. The fourth time around, it's getting old, and yet it's still mildly intriguing in some aspects, because you brought up a very good point before we started recording. You told me, imagine if LeBron does this.
Yeah.
Imagine if he takes this team to the championship.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, but... And then I started looking over the roster, and I was like, yeah, you're right. That would be his greatest accomplishment, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, by far. I mean,
yeah.
All of the talk, like Mark Jackson had that talking point, I forget, I think during game six, when he was like, well, if he takes this roster to the finals, it's going to be better than winning a championship, which is stupid. But if he takes this roster to a championship, yeah, I think this is his most impressive one by far, just given the depleted state. I mean, we don't know what's going on with Kevin Love. So let's just go right into it. We'll start from the Cavaliers side, because... again, like, it's the theme of the 2017-18 season. Injuries are looming large on both sides, but we'll start from the Cleveland angle. Kevin Love remains in the concussion protocol. We don't know his status for game one. We're not going to until Thursday, most likely, unless he gets cleared tomorrow. So we can't say whether he's going to play in game one. I don't anticipate he misses the entire finals, but we don't know that. So
right.
Let's assume more that he does miss game one. How do you think that affects Cleveland in this matchup?
Is it okay to say not by, you know, it won't be affecting anything because it's still the Warriors?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, we talked about it for ahead of Boston-Cleveland game seven, and I wrongly sang the praises of Larry Nance, who did nothing, but, you know, Jeff Green came and had a monster game. In place of Love in the starting lineup. And we were talking about how without Love, defensively, they're more versatile, more switchable. They're not going to have such an obvious target for the Warriors to pick on. Or in that, you know, in that case, we were talking about the Celtics. But the same goes for the Warriors. Like, now you've got, you know, Tristan Thompson's going to be your starting five. You're going to have LeBron, Jeff Green, George Hill, and the corpse that is J.R. Smith in your starting lineup.
Right.
So, like, you can really interchangeably switch between any of those positions. And, you know, we'll talk about the Warriors and Andre Iguodala in a few minutes. But that versatility, I think, you know, they're going to miss Love's rebounding, of course. But as a scorer, he hurt his hand early on in the playoffs, and he just hasn't looked right since. Mm-hmm. Like, he shot very poorly in that Boston series before he went down. He shot poorly in the Indiana series as well. He was a little bit better against Toronto, but still, compared to the rest of the team, he didn't shoot nearly as well as like everyone else who was shooting 70% from the field against Toronto.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say they're going to miss him on the glass because that's been their big advantage against the Warriors, you know, the past 3 years with Love and Thompson. That was like their one place that they could beat the Warriors. But aside from that, like, it's, you know, it's what I was saying about Chris Paul had he played in game seven. I think Love at this point is at least as much of a liability as an asset, if not more so. And it's, you know, nothing against Kevin Love as a player, just he has a bum hand and he can't shoot as well as he needs to.
Right. I still think Golden State goes at Jeff Green.
Oh, yeah.
Because here's the thing. We're trying to compare, in a sense, what Boston did to what Golden State did. Well, Kevin Durant is like five times the player Jason Tatum is at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
You have Klay, who is also a lot better than Jaylen Brown. And then you have Steph, who is like on a different world than Terry Rozier.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, the Cavs do have some switching flexibility now that they don't have with Kevin Love, but that plays more into their advantage when they're playing a team like Boston than they are playing against Golden State. So now you have Durant, who is, what, 7 feet, who can take it to the basket on, you know, basically every time he touches it. He won't have to be too concerned about Tristan Thompson. He won't really have to be too concerned about Jeff Green. He won't have to be too concerned about J.R. Smith rotating over and helping because, yeah, it's J.R. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what I'm looking at here is how do you really slow down KD, who's going to play like a pivotal role in all this? Like, we can talk all day long about what kind of advantages Cleveland have in not having Love there, or, you know, their depth and their shooting ability, whatever. The whole thing to me boils down to what can Cleveland do to not get Kevin Durant involved? And I only have one answer for that, but that answer isn't a great one. It is make LeBron the dedicated defender, but that's going to take him away from the offensive side of the ball where he's, like, dimensions more important. So what do you do? Like, where do you go from here if you're Cleveland? Like, what's your point of attack?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question. I think you're right. You can't put LeBron on KD just because it's going to take too much away from him on offense. It's going to take too much energy. We've seen him actively trying to preserve energy on that end of the floor. In the regular season, at least, they've mostly put LeBron on Draymond. And then, you know, he plays that, like, free safety role where he can kind of cheat off the ball. But, like, yeah, in the Christmas Day game, against the Warriors, he was on Draymond for 45 possessions, according to the Second Spectrum data on NBA.com. Next closest was Jordan Bell at 8. And then in their other regular season matchup, 38 possessions on Draymond, 15 on KD. So, yeah, I mean, they're not going to do that full time. It looks like Jeff Green actually got that assignment a decent amount, especially on Christmas Day. You know, well, 11 possessions. I mean, he just didn't play all that much. But, you know, KD shot 1 of 5 from the field against Jeff Green in those 11 possessions. So it looks like, you know, KD wanted to go at him, but he wasn't all that efficient doing so. So I think if you're the Cavs, I think your strategy is basically defensively what the Rockets did. You're going to switch everything to prevent ball movement. You're going to encourage isolations. Like, you want KD to ISO and you want him to post up, and even if he gets 30 plus points, at least you're avoiding the barrage of like those back-breaking three-pointers from Klay and Steph, especially in the third quarter.
Do you though? I don't know if I agree with that. Look, I mean, it's one thing to go up against PJ Tucker and Trevor Ariza, who are both amazing defenders and are just that much cleverer on the defensive side of the ball. Going up against Jeff Green, and if Kevin Love returns, Kevin Love.
Yeah.
And like, who else?
Nance, I guess.
Like Larry Nance. Yeah.
No, there aren't good options, really. Right.
That would be, what, 30 points a game on a 65% true shooting percentage from KD?
Yeah.
Then you can argue, oh, would you rather have KD go off for that number every game than have the ball swing? Well, I think both could actually happen. We saw it in Game 7 last night. Mm-hmm. KD ended up with, what, 34? And the ball still swung.
Yeah.
Steph hit seven or eight threes. Was it seven?
At seven, I believe, yeah.
Seven, yeah, and Klay got involved. I mean, that's really the scary thing about Golden State. Like, you can't do that. You can't really apply that logic to them as you can with Cleveland, where you say, oh, if you stop LeBron with this, then this and this and that won't happen. No, because you can't do that with Golden State, because they have so many layers that they can go to. Yeah. Where if you shut one thing down, well, then they have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 backup plans right there, right, that can go. Like, think about the amount of two-way games or two-way combinations that you can find in Golden State. Like, you have Steph and KD, you have Steph and Draymond, you have Klay and KD, Klay and Draymond. Like, even to a point, Steph and Klay, because they can screen for each other. Like, there are so many combinations in regards to those four. And then you have so many X factors. Like, you have Nick Young, like, swaggy coming off the bench. Like, you don't know. I mean, at this point in time, I would argue he's better than J.R. Smith.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, J.R. Smith has been horrendous.
He's been terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. Yeah. And then you have JaVale McGee, who's probably going to see some burn.
Because
look at that lack of size on Cleveland's team. And then my X factor for this series, Jordan Bell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have so many options. You even have David West who can come in there. Like, you, oh man, look, I'm not going to predict anything for this series, because LeBron has proven me wrong in round one, in round two, in round three now. So sure, I'm not going to sit here and crap on Cleveland to that extent. But that roster, man, it's so problematic that I'm sitting here looking over this matchup and just go, I can't find like a silver lining here for this matchup. Like, if this was Houston and Cleveland, now that would have been interesting.
Yeah,
Houston minus Chris Paul versus, you know, LeBron and trash.
They should really rebrand the team as, instead of the Cleveland Cavaliers, just the Cleveland LeBron and trash.
Yeah, and then he leaves, and it's gonna be really awkward.
Right, just Cleveland trash then. Yeah,
the Cleveland trash. Oh, that sounds appropriate. No, but I mean, it's just LeBron is. We've talked about all playoffs long. LeBron has to do so much. Yeah. This is the one match where he has to do even more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to your point, going back to the KD thing for just a minute, we haven't seen these teams play since the trade deadline. They played, you know, Christmas Day, and then they played in mid-January. So a lot of the matchup data from those matchups are not going to be all that useful, at least on Cleveland's end. That said, Jay Crowder was the primary defender on Kevin Durant in both of those matchups. So now they're down Jay Crowder. And it speaks to your point, Mort. Like, in terms of roster construction, especially when you compare it to Houston, Houston had a bunch of those two-way wings. And, like, Houston built its roster this past offseason, as Daryl Morey has, like, openly admitted. He built it with Golden State in mind. He got a bunch of two-way wings who he could plug on KD, on Steph, on Klay, on Draymond, and just interchange them. Cleveland's got LeBron. You have Jeff Green. And then, I would assume Larry Nance is going to see some KD time, but, like, other than that,
Rodney Kyle Korver, Hood?
Yeah, right? Like, Rodney Hood's going to...
Oh,
man. Yeah, if you bring Rodney Hood out, it goes from a possible gentleman sweep to, like, Warriors in three. I think they might just cancel game four.
Cancel game four.
Yeah, just like a mercy rule. But you're right. It speaks to the point of, like, Cleveland just doesn't have the personnel, really, to match up with this Warriors team. And they haven't, you know, for years, frankly. But at least back then they had Kyrie Irving to, like, match flamethrower counterpunches. And now,
they did. You know,
possibly without Kevin Love in game one or game two or however long he's out. You're right. I have no idea. LeBron, not only does he have to put up a 40-point triple-double as he did throughout the Boston series, but he also has to play impeccable defense against Kevin Durant or against Klay Thompson or against Steph.
Yeah, it's just too much to ask. I mean, look, there's only one way, in my point of view, that Cleveland wins this series.
Mm-hmm.
That is if Golden State just goes cold from three, and everyone, and I mean everyone from Cleveland, starts to hit like a 40% clip from outside. Like Kyle Korver hitting 50, J.R. Smith reverting back to his like 2012 form. Kevin Love being healthy and returning to his Minnesota form, you know, Jeff Green going back to being 22 again. And Jordan Clarkson would have to become the Lakers version of himself, because he's not been that since arriving in Cleveland. There are so many guys there who can sort of contribute, but they're playing a role that is just a little bit higher than they should be playing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just have this lack of a third guy or even a second guy, because I'm not sure I look at Kevin Love as the second guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have two guys who are quote-unquote stars, and I'm using the quote-unquote because LeBron is really, in my point of view, the only legitimate star on that team. Kevin Love is kind of on the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, the drop-off is so significant. It's you could literally argue that everyone after Kevin Love would not be secured a starting spot on any team in the, around the NBA at this point.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Who?
George Hill would start for...
I'm saying you could make an argument.
Oh, well, I mean, if you were going to say none of them would start for the Warriors, I'll give you that.
Oh, no, that's true. What I mean about it... Yeah, okay, I worded this poorly. What I meant is, like, there's a debate whether that guy should start. Like, if the third best player is J.R. Smith or George Hill, wherever you go with it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, maybe he could start for a handful of teams, but he's not going to be, like, a surefire starter for the vast majority of teams around the NBA. Whereas if you look at Golden State, like, obviously, like, the third and the fourth and the fifth guy, they would get significant roles throughout the course of the league.
Right.
But Cleveland, that's, like, it's LeBron, it's Love, and it's a bunch of, at best, role players. And they have to hit their mark perfectly for this to become a competitive series. Now, am I saying that couldn't happen? No, it could happen. Like, theoretically, it could happen. And Kyle Korver could go nuclear. He has that ability.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just not finding it likely.
Right. Well, I mean, we saw throughout not only the Boston series, but, like, just look, someone tweeted just the picture on Basketball Reference of the playoffs per game stats of the Cleveland Cavaliers roster. And it's horrendous. It's LeBron being incredible. You know, 34 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, almost above 54% shooting from the field. The next closest is Kevin Love at 13.9, and he's the only other double-digit scorer they have. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a bunch of guys in the 8 and 9 range, which is Jeff Green, J.R. Smith, George Hill, Kyle Korver. And so you're right. Like, if some of those guys go off, if J.R. Smith starts shooting above 36% from the field, maybe this is a competitive series. But nothing we've seen throughout the playoffs suggests that's going to happen, especially going into, like, Oracle Arena, where, you know, they're even if they do go off, you're still going to get hit with the third quarter Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've seen no lead is safe at halftime. I mean, Houston had a 10-point lead in Game 6, an 11-point lead in Game 7, and they were trailing at the end of the third quarter in both games.
Right. Oh, you know what? You just made me realize there is one more way that the Warriors could at least lose a game.
Okay. How's that?
That they completely underestimate their opponent.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's going to happen. Yeah. Like, you know, and this is just what the Warriors do. Like, there's going to be one... Right? Yeah, there's going to be one game where they, like, turn the ball over 25 times because they're, like, Steph is trying to get cute and, like, do some behind-the-back passes. Yeah. And, like, yeah, they're going to have one game where they just cough it away because they're being too cocky.
It's funny. I don't think I've seen anyone, like, suggest a sweep.
Yeah. No, I don't think I have either. Because I think people know, like, this is what the Warriors do. They're too undisciplined to sweep this Cavs team. Especially, you know, I think that's also a respect to LeBron thing. I think it's like, all right, we learned our lesson. We continually underestimate what LeBron can do. And it's, again, we said it in the, you know, we both picked Boston in Game 7. But we both said, we're not underestimating LeBron. We were penciling him in for a 40-point triple-double. And he, you know, we had 35, 15, and 9, close enough. We didn't expect Boston's supporting cast to go completely MIA in Game 7. No.
Like, 15% from downtown?
Yeah, like, the Cavs scored 87 points and won on the road. I mean, if you told me the Cavs scored 87 points in Game 7, I would have said LeBron James is already packing his bags and leaving Cleveland. Like, they should not have won that game. So, will the Warriors... Like, I would be flabbergasted if the Warriors drop either of these first two games at home. Do I think Cleveland's supporting cast at home, knowing, you know, if we don't step up here, we're going to get swept out of the playoffs? Like, I bet they come through in either game three or game four. I'm not sure which one.
Yeah. No, I agree. Could you see a scenario in which this goes six?
I guess. I mean, if they hold, if Cleveland homes hold court in games three and four, like, I would really be shocked if they're not down 2-0 going back to Cleveland.
That's basically a championship for Cleveland. Like, if they go six, I think Cleveland is entitled to have a parade.
Yeah, I agree. We also have to talk about, from the Warriors side of things, you know, Love is questionable going to game one for Cleveland. Andre Iguodala, we still don't know what's going on with him. Steve Kerr, after game seven, he was on the Inside the NBA panel, and he said, I'm going to just read his quote, "It's literally a day-to-day thing. He has not progressed, unfortunately, as well as we thought he would. Obviously, he's a huge factor against Cleveland. You've got to have a lot of bodies to guard LeBron, and Andre's been our main guy against LeBron the last 3 years." So Chris Haynes of ESPN reported Tuesday morning that Iguodala recently got a second opinion on his knee, and he's still trying to figure out what's wrong. He plans to search for a remedy in the coming days, but his status for game one remains unknown for the time being.
Yeah.
So, Mort, I mean, that might be the answer to your question. If Iguodala misses, I mean, hopefully he doesn't miss the entire finals, but if he misses games one and two, or he misses, you know, the first couple games, I guess that opens the door a little bit.
Yeah, it does.
But then again, like, you know, I was looking into the matchup data because I'm writing about this Iguodala thing for Give Me Sport tomorrow. And since KD came to the team, KD's been the main guy on LeBron. Like, we all think about Iggy being that guy because of the 2015 NBA Finals where, you know, he held LeBron to, like, he was basically glued to LeBron the whole time. He held LeBron to less than 40% shooting. You know, I looked into this again. So in the Christmas Day game, 33 of LeBron's 77 possessions, KD was the guy on him, according to Second Spectrum. The mid-January game, 44 of 80. So 55% of his total possessions.
And I assume Draymond is going to get some run at LeBron as well.
Yeah, Draymond was 13 in the mid-January game. Iggy only had 3 that game. In Christmas, it was KD 33, Iggy 14, Draymond 4. I mean, it's kind of, they shuffle it around. I mean, it's no one guy is gonna do it all, but the Iggy absence is not as devastating as you might think, just coming from the possession by possession data. It seems like KD's going to be the main guy. They're going to put Iguodala elsewhere and just have him cheat off help as, you know, a potential, like, double team, you know, stick him on J.R. Smith, and then you can have him roam and play free safety, basically.
Right. Yeah, I mean, having those three guys, if Iggy is back, I mean, that we talked about this at length prior to this podcast as well. You know, in today's game, it's all about rotating guys onto the big superstars so they get different looks. So they can't really prepare themselves for one matchup because then it becomes a little bit too easy.
Right.
And LeBron is a prime example of that, because if he knew that he was going to get one guy on him, he would figure that guy out. And he would find a way to overcome it. But if you have Draymond, KD, Iggy, maybe even Sean Livingston, who is pretty tall and can compete at a high level, that's changing the entire game, and it's changing the structure. I think that's essential for Golden State. What I want to know from your point here is, should Golden State be keyed in on limiting LeBron, or should they be keyed in on limiting his teammates? Because when I look at those stats that you presented before as well, like the Cleveland Cavaliers playoff stats, I mean, I'm just saying, shut down LeBron. Try everything you can to shut down LeBron and then let everyone else just do their damage, because so far they have proven jack shit.
Yep. I totally agree with that. Yeah. If you're Golden State, dare J.R. Smith to hit a couple shots against you.
Oh, yeah.
Dare, I mean, again, I don't think Rodney Hood is going to get much of any run in this series, but if he does, carte blanche, Rodney Hood, please. By all means, we will leave you wide open from three. Make us pay for it, because you're shooting 15.8% from three in the playoffs. Like,
and same goes for Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah, it's a, yeah, Jordan Clarkson, 30.9% overall in the playoffs, 25.6% from three-point range. Like, you know, LeBron is the one guy who you know can beat you. So, yeah, I think you do everything you in your power to at least limit what he does. And you're right, Mort. I think it's, you know, it's going to be a team effort. They're not going to, even if KD is the primary guy who draws that responsibility, regardless of whether Iguodala is there, you're going to get a couple possessions with Klay Thompson on him, with Draymond Green on him, with Jordan Bell. Your boy Jordan Bell, I think, is going to, you know, could at least have, I don't think they're going to do it all that often, but like the Warriors are still going to be very switchable. So they're going to use that to their advantage, and they are going to have confidence in whoever ends up on him. Kevon Looney as well. You know, Iguodala last year as well in the finals, you know, he was a little bit hobbled, but again, KD took a lot of that matchup with LeBron. And I found a quote from the Bay Area news group about, you know, Iggy spoke about that after the game, and he said, "I think we're in a unique position where we have a lot of length and a lot of guys who can guard multiple positions. We can change the matchups to give teams different looks, and that's what we've been trying to do. KD and Draymond have done a really good job when we're on the floor together of communicating really well on our switches and covering our areas." So it's like what you said. The Warriors don't want to just put one guy, glue him on LeBron as the designated LeBron stopper, because as you said, LeBron's too cerebral. He's going to figure it out. But if he doesn't know who's going to be guarding him on any one possession, or they can switch interchangeably, that's going to complicate things for him. And it's just, you know, it's going to make him hesitate that split second, which is really all you need if you're the Warriors. That's the difference between him, you know, making one of these dazzling passes to a teammate, or, you know, you can recover in time to actually get a hand to J.R. Smith's face.
Right. Oh, J.R. Smith. I want to see JR and Swaggy like go at it for like five or six straight possessions. Jacking up threes on each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the highlights of the finals. Because I know people are bummed about Cavs Warriors for it. Like, it variety is the spice of life. It would have been nice to see a different matchup. But, like, I will say this to anyone who's dreading this matchup, who doesn't want to tune into this, two things. One, remember back in the late 2000s when, like, the NBA was so desperately trying to angle the Kobe-LeBron thing, and they just actually met in the finals? Like, it was LeBron in 2007 and then Kobe in 2008 through 2010. But they had, like, the puppets and everything. LeBron suddenly has, you know, this is the third time he's meeting Kevin Durant in the finals. Like, this is what the NBA wanted with Kobe and LeBron. Like, now you've got LeBron and Durant. This is continuing to build what could be a historical rivalry. And, you know, I don't know that we're going to see Cavs Warriors 5 next year. If LeBron leaves, I know we will not be seeing Cavs Warriors 5 next year, because the Cavs are not going back to the finals without LeBron James.
Nope.
So, like, it might, you know, it very well might be LeBron Warriors 5 next year. But this is, you know, unless LeBron stays in Cleveland, this is the last time we're going to see this Cleveland Cavaliers team in the finals for a very long time. So I can understand the fatigue, but I think it's at least, you know, give it a game at least. Like, let's see how it plays out. I think, if anything, these playoffs have proved to us that all of our prognostications and all of the thinking that we could do about this matchup, it means shit when it actually goes on the court. Because you know, like, a Chris Paul injury changed that whole Rockets-Warriors series. Like, I'm not wishing an injury upon anyone in this series. We've already dealt with way too many injuries throughout not only the playoffs, but the regular season as well.
The whole damn season, yeah.
But, like, if Steph Curry comes down wrong and twists his knee and he's out for a couple games, it's a whole different series. Like,
don't even say that.
I know.
I mean, look, we need to be careful, because if that happens, no.
Doug's Twitter's going to be, they're going to come to my mentions.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to come into your mentions and I'm going to rail on you. Look, no, I agree. It was Matt Moore had a good tweet yesterday as well. He was like, I think it was the Bulls, or he just put LeBron on the Bulls and asked,
"Oh,
is this a finals team?"
Yeah.
And everyone was like, yep.
Yeah.
Because and the Bulls are so bad, it's simply because that's the LeBron factor, right?
Right.
As long as you just give him a few teammates who can do something in the East. The thing is, I don't know if that is a testament to LeBron solely, or it's also a testament to still how weak the East is. I think it may be both.
Yeah. I mean, but if you put the Rockets in the East,
right,
and then you put LeBron on a random team, I'm not going to say any team, like LeBron on the Magic, I don't think beats the Rockets. But LeBron on the Pacers this year probably does.
Mm.
LeBron on the Bucks absolutely does. Like, yeah. I think it is more of a testament to LeBron. Like, I think, you know, the teams that he faced this year especially were not... I mean, the Boston thing is different just because next year, even if he comes back to Cleveland, Boston's going to have Irving and Hayward. We don't know what's going to happen with Marcus Smart, but, you know, either way, like, LeBron with this Cleveland roster versus a healthy Celtics team, I think the healthy Celtics are favored. And that's nothing...
I would agree.
Yeah. It's not against LeBron. It's just, like, that, you know, they took him to 7 this year without two of their best players. Like, what, you know, what happens when you get those guys back and Cleveland adds... I don't care who they add with the number 8 pick. It's not going to be as good as Irving and Hayward combined.
I mean, I have Boston as the champs next year.
Yeah, I don't think that's outrageous.
I think they could beat Golden State, theoretically.
I agree. I think, if anything, what we've learned in these playoffs, and maybe learned isn't the right word because I feel like we've been moving this way the last couple of years anyway, but you need to have a bunch of wings... two-way wings who can switch if you're going to be a championship contender. And, like, that's what Houston went out. You know, Houston went to the bargain bin and got P.J. Or I guess they spent a decent amount of money on P.J. Tucker. But they got him. They had Ariza. They did go to the bargain bin for Luke Mbamute. And that shoulder injury really hurt them in that series. Boston has Tatum, Brown, Hayward, Marcus Morris. Like, Semi Ojeleye is going to be better next year. Like, they have the personnel, you're right, to run with the Warriors.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't think people talk about that enough. And just, I love Jordan Bell, but Al Horford against the Golden State Warriors?
Yeah.
Like, who do you go with at that point, right? But, no, I think it's interesting. I think a lot of the fatigue is not because of LeBron. It's not because of the Dubs, necessarily. I think it's because... It's sort of a symptom where you go, is that really, like, is the East that bad? Because we've all seen that the weaknesses Cleveland come into and into the finals with year after year after year. I mean, they have been an imperfect team.
Sure.
Ever since LeBron rejoined them in 2014. So you're kind of looking at it and go, can no one really step up to this? And one part is... LeBron, and that's fair. That is totally, that's a fair compliment to LeBron. He deserves it. He owns it. But you just go, I mean, if when you look at the roster construction in this particular season, the trade deadline, the guys they got in who just turned into dog poop, like, they are virtually playing with no one outside of LeBron, and they make it to the finals. I think a lot of that is just reactionary in the way where you go, is that really it, Eastern Conference? Is that it? Are you really that bad? So I think that's more in line with that. And then we've talked about this before as well. Like, who has the first two picks in the draft?
Right.
Not Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this year I think is especially, you know, the outlier among them. Because at least in years past, it was like LeBron, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving. At least, you know, I don't care who's surrounding them. You can understand. And, like, J.R. Smith wasn't a corpse back then. Tristan Thompson was more useful, too. Like, this year feels more like the 2007 Cavs than any other year. But
they were so bad. You're right. They were so bad.
Right, right. But, like, yeah, years past, I think it's fair, but, you know, I'm looking at the West, and yeah, you had the Warriors since the mid-2010s. You had the Spurs, as always, just always. And yeah, then you had OKC because Presti had that, you know, he had KD and Westbrook and Harden and
Ibaka. He drafted three MVPs in a row.
Right, right. But, like, outside of that, you put the Clippers in the East. Do the Clippers stop LeBron? If you put the Blazers in the East, do Blazers stop LeBron? Like, LeBron would have gone... If you put LeBron against any of those teams outside of Golden State, San Antonio, and then even OKC, like, the Heat pounded OKC when they played them in 2012. I mean, yeah, they were, you know, they would have gotten better, but...
They were, yeah. They were very young, but yeah. You're right. No,
but then they got, like, injury ravaged the next couple of years. Like, yeah. Ibaka got hurt 1 year, KD got hurt 1 year, Westbrook got hurt 1 year, Harden left. Like, you know... I don't think
right.
They were not. I think, like, you put the Memphis Grizzlies with Z-Bo and Marc Gasol and Mike Conley. Like, LeBron still gets through them.
You mean prime Grizzlies?
Yeah.
That depends on the roster that LeBron is with. Like, if it's LeBron and Kyrie, yeah. I would agree. Like, but right, the current right. incarnation of the Cleveland Cavaliers, like, there's probably a handful of teams in the West.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
At least three, like the Warriors, Houston, and San Antonio, assuming Kawhi is healthy.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying this year's Cavs are different. This year's Cavs are completely different.
But years past, normally speaking, okay. No, I would agree. Then it's not a handful at all. Then it's only a few select teams. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this year's team, I'm just going to keep using the 2007 comparison because it really felt like Jeff Green was basically good. It was basically Bobby Gibson this year, just like out of nowhere to have a huge performance. Any other final thoughts before we give our predictions on this series?
Yes, actually, and that's a little bit more, you know, overall playoffy than focused solely on this series. Have you noticed how many three-pointers teams are taking right now and are not going in? It seems like there's a very significant dip in three-point field goal percentage in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that was the same thing last year, but I have a stat here for you. Let me just... I just, of course, closed the tab that I had, but I looked it up earlier, and let me see. Yeah. So 14 for 83 from downtown. That's the combined efforts of Houston, Boston in their elimination games.
Oof.
That's 16.8%. 14 makes 83 attempts. At what point, and, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the new age NBA. I love the three ball. Mm-hmm. I think it's an essential part to team success. But at what point do you, as a team, look inwards and go, you know what, we need to dial it back. We need to actually make a concerned effort of getting to the basket. We need to seek out free throws. Like, I know I'm going to say old school basketball.
Yeah.
That's not meant literally, but going back to a little bit more traditional basketball sense, where it's about getting to the basket, getting free throws generated, maybe take more mid-range shots. Because when you miss that many threes, you're just going to give Charles Barkley ammunition for the next 2 years.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think for Houston and Boston in particular, it was a combination of, one, they just had such short rotations, and both of them were a lot due to injuries. Like, Houston was running a six-man rotation by the end. Boston, I think, was seven. So I think by game seven, you just have dead legs. And I think you're right, Mort. Like, once you see that, once you go into the second half and you've missed, what, like 27 straight threes if you're Houston.
Oh, God, yeah.
Mike D'Antoni's got to go say, all right, guys, like, you know, I said this in the last episode. I don't want to make this a thing about the officiating because I think overall the officials have been fine throughout most of the playoffs. But, you know, again, it was a common refrain, especially from the Houston contingent during Game 7, that Houston just wasn't getting the whistles people thought they should. So maybe that's why, you know, maybe that's why they were tired, they had dead legs, and if they're, like, it's exhausting to drive to the basket, get clobbered, and then not get a whistle, so they were just jacking up threes. But you're right. I mean,
it's not a viable option.
Yeah. I mean. No, like, in the third quarter, with James Harden is taking these step-back threes, and he's, you know, just airballing them, you're just screaming at the TV, like, all right, guys, you can make something good happen inside of that 23-foot arc if you're just aggressive. If nothing else, just drive and kick. But, yeah, it was disheartening to see that. I'll give you that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the elimination games. It just generally seems like in this playoffs, you've seen a lot of games where, you know, important players rely on the three-pointer because they've relied on it throughout the whole regular season. Mm-hmm. And now because it's the playoffs, defenses are more intense. Mm-hmm. You know, the intensity overall is actually just amped up a lot. And you still have this idea, oh, I still have to get my threes up. Where, no, the playoffs is about adjustments. Yeah. It's a chess match. You need to find different ways to get your shots up as well. Like, Victor Oladipo fell into this trap once in a while as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just hoping to see a series now in the finals where, and I think we will, because these are veteran teams. They have a very mm-hmm. good understanding of shot selection. And when I say teams, I mean Golden State has a very good idea of shot selection, right. So does LeBron James.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of hoping to see this series turn into a more chess matchy type of series where it's not just guys jacking up the long ball completely out of the flow of the offense.
I think from Golden State side, you will see that. I worry from Cleveland side.
Well, that's part of their offense, though.
Like, I know.
Steph Curry taking 35-footers is actually a part of their game plan. So, I mean, yeah.
And, like, Brian Windhorst has been hammering this point home throughout the playoffs. Just, like, the Cavs are completely reliant on the three ball. And when it's falling, they can win. And when it's not, they're usually going to lose. So, you know, J.R. Smith is not going to drive to the basket. It's just not in his wheelhouse anymore. They just don't. They don't have many guys who can create off the dribble. You have LeBron. You have George Hill. That's about it. Like, Kevin Love can't really create off the dribble.
And even George Hill is kind of,
yeah, right. Yeah, that's not a high percentage look for George Hill more often than not. Like, he can do it. I mean, I guess Jeff Green can do it a little bit, but, like, more on drives than it is, like, he's not going to create for others off the dribble. So, I think you'll be half satisfied by the series award. I think Golden State will run that, like, aesthetically pleasing offense. I don't
think
Cleveland
will. This is where Minnesota Kevin Love would make so much sense.
Mm.
Like, he was in the post, he was in the mid-range area. Like, he would use the three, sure, but it wasn't, like, his be-all, end-all, which it is now in Cleveland. Like, he was just so much more involved. Like, dribble handoffs, like, getting to the free-throw line, really banging in the post after offensive rebounds. Like, I just think you need to mix it up a lot more. I don't think you can just use one aspect of the way that you score and go, oh, this is the way that we're going to do it. Mm-hmm. I think you just need to be diverse. Mm-hmm. And remember, when we talk about draft prospects, we talk about three-level scores.
Yeah.
Well, why do we do that if the NBA is turning into a point where, hey, you know what, just you're a one-level scorer. That's from outside the arc. Go out there and take those shots. Like, no, I think you need to have those three-level scores, which these finals are going to have plenty of.
Yeah.
Utilize it. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I think teams are just so concerned with efficiency now. Like, a guy like a Donovan Mitchell is a three-level scorer, but Utah only gave him 20-plus shots per game because they had no better option. Like, if they had more efficient scorers, they would not have given him such a high volume of attempts. So, like, LeBron...
Absolutely.
Is going to shoot 25 times per game at least, most likely. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, they don't have any other three-level scorers, do they?
I mean, no, that's true. No, Cleveland doesn't. I was referring more to LeBron and Golden State. Yeah. But here's the thing with LeBron, though. Like, LeBron, in those 25 attempts, you'll see everything. You'll see threes. Yep. You'll see mid-range pull-ups. You'll see post-ups. You'll see shots coming off offensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see drives. You'll see the whole package. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of why Cleveland keeps winning. Because when you look at the way that the Raptors and the Pacers played, like, they were looking for different shots, or the same type of shots consistently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that sort of mix-up where you go, okay, now I'm going to drive, now I'm going to pull up from 15. Like, those ideas were just not there. Right. I still firmly believe that Victor Oladipo would have had that series if he had just diversed his game a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to work on that in the offseason. I think a lot of these young guys, especially, and to your point, like Jason Tatum was that type of three-level scorer, which is why he's been so damn impressive throughout the playoffs. Like, you didn't know what you were going to get from him.
Right, but that was just, he's so young, so I don't think it's fair to count him into that yet.
Yeah.
Also because he was asked to spot up a lot.
Right.
And Terry Rozier was very inefficient that series. And Jaylen Brown, I felt, spent way too much time as like a coming off screens popping threes.
Yeah.
Kind of like, he's too athletic to not utilize him in different manners as well. Don't turn him into like J.R. Smith.
Right. All right, wait. I know you
prediction
said
time?
Yeah, I know you said you're not going to give a prediction, but give a prediction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm probably leaning towards gentleman sweep.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not against Cleveland going to six games. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that Cleveland wins. I think everything would need to break right for them, and they'd probably have to benefit from an injury or like Iggy missing the entire finals or whatever. But like, it's not completely impossible. It's very improbable. You know, if I was assigning odds, I'd say there's like definitely a less than like a 2% chance it happens. But again, let's see it play out before we rule it out. Not subtweeting anyone out here, but like, yeah, we get it. The Warriors are heavy favorites going into the finals. They've been heavy favorites all year. But this is why we watch sports. Underdogs sometimes win. So, I mean, the Cavs did in 2016. So, like you, I'm going, you know, I'm leading a gentleman's sweep as well. I could see it going six. I don't think it goes any further than that. I hope it does. I'd love for it to go, but, you know, I hope it goes seven.
That's just because you want the league to have more cap space.
No, I don't know what you're talking about, Mort.
You want Paul George.
Yeah. Give me that BRI, baby.
Yeah, I know. You always have an ulterior motive.
It's a big summer. What can I say?
That's true.
All right, so everyone, we hope you enjoy the finals. We'll have a lot of content coming out throughout the finals. We're also going to start ramping up even more on draft stuff in the coming weeks. So stay tuned to our Twitter account, @TheNBAPod. You can catch all of our new episodes there. You can also find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're now being hosted on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. So check them out on Twitter, @AlmightyCasts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
Oh, thank you, Brian. I won't have to stay up for another 2 days, which means I can live a normal life, and I probably, maybe, won't get divorced because of it. So that's great.
Mazel tov. That's huge.
Take care, man.
Later.